Well, being in an environment with people that are like us, we're able to learn more about ourselves and exactly where we come from. Whereas going straight to somewhere that where people don't look like us, they don't know the struggles that we've gone through, it will once again bring about that feeling of alienation. Like, we don't know who we are.
Hello, I'm Junius Williams, your host on Everything's Political. And this season, we're saying, if everything's political, what do young people think? And we have two very interesting young people here today from University High School in Newark. And they're going to talk about a topic that's been very timely, comes up sometimes more often than others. It's about desegregation of schools. I'm joined by my co-host, Francesca Larson. And let me start by asking each of you to introduce yourself.
My name is Malachi. I'm so honored to be here.
Malachi who?
Malachi Yepes.
Hello, my name's Kamaya Jones.
And both of you are juniors at University High, I understand.
Yes.
Yes, that is correct.
I want you to talk a little bit about your concept of what it means to desegregate or integrate schools.
Well, I think that desegregation is kind of like the attempt to bring different backgrounds and cultures of students, bringing them together so that we can kind of unify all of our understandings to come to one larger consensus.
No, it's actually, I don't know if I could top that, but that was a great definition. I agree with Malachi. Is bringing a group of kids or just a group of people, whether that be different beliefs, different backgrounds, different cultures, bringing them together to either learn or just to, you know, learn about a topic or just learn about each other.
Okay, now in New Jersey, and it's certainly true in Newark, let me pull out this summary of a case here. The New Jersey Superior Court decided in a school desegregation case in October of 2023, they said that, yes, many students are in segregated schools. And they said that it's the state's responsibility to cure that matter because the New Jersey Constitution says segregated schools are illegal. But it opens the question, what is the solution? First, are you familiar with that constitutional provision?
Yes.
I'm not going to ask you to be lawyers, but I want to.
Well, we could pretend today.
10 lawyers. I like that.
I like that, too. That sounds pretty cool.
One of us is a real lawyer.
All right. Yeah, I did that. And first, tell me what you know about the other litigation about segregated schools, starting with whatever you know about schools desegregation cases.
Well, the most prominent one that comes to my mind is the Ruby Bridges situation way back in, I believe it was the 50s, where Ruby Bridges was going to an all-white school that all the white teachers that taught there didn't want to teach her because of her skin color. And while that problem was solved, I suppose you could say that it was solved during that time, we still face it today.
Oh, definitely.
Completely. And, well, that's just my layman's terms of segregation in today's society.
And so the issue that you are referring to is the fact that if we have desegregation, and you're talking about beyond Newark, maybe even beyond Newark, let's say going to some of the suburban schools, there wouldn't be too many black folks or Latino folks there in a sea of whites. Would you feel comfortable in an environment like that?
Around people that were different than me, that looked different than me. I can actually bring up a personal anecdote about how of my time at University High School in my freshman year, I didn't actually know what was in store for me when I went there. I originally decided to pursue my writing career at university. And when I got there, everyone like a majority of the school didn't look like me. And I felt this kind of looming presence of alienation, that people had these preconceived notions about me, and just because of the way that I looked, the way that I talked, because I like to articulate my words, and I come off as, in some people's eyes, pompous, or I'm not sure what the word I could use for that, but yeah, that sense of alienation first going to university, it really kind of hindered me, if that makes sense, during my freshman year.
And you're from Colombia.
Yes, I am a quarter Colombian.
All right. Well, did that have an impact on the way you saw yourself in terms of being different?
Well, a lot of people, at least in my life, have seen me as, they don't notice the fact that I am of Spanish Latin descent. They usually look at me and they assume that I'm a member of the Caucasian community. And I feel like I have features about me that would clearly indicate that I'm not Caucasian, but the wide perception of me is that I am Caucasian.
How about you, Kamaya? Let's talk about Ruby Bridges in that school situation where she was the only black one. I mean, there was no question that she was black.
Mm-hmm.
What does that environment mean to you?
I think that her just simply even going to a school where there were no kids that looked like her was just brave and just by itself. That's definitely something that I can't say not many kids of me and Malachi's generation would do, because they're not what people that look like them. They're not people that sound like them, that talk like them. And I feel like that was a brave step on her behalf. And me personally, I can definitely relate to that. Like, when I came to New York, I actually was originally in Maplewood, South Orange. And I came to New York, and how Malachi felt in university, his first year, freshman year, a little alienation. That's kind of how I felt. Because same way, like, I got called whitewashed because I articulated my words differently. I actually, like, when I'm in the classroom, that's where I shine. I'm talking and I love learning and I love teaching what I've learned to other people. And they took it as like, oh, I'm whitewashed, I'm this and I'm that. And like, people don't realize, you know, that I'm just like everybody else. It's just that I may talk a little different, you know, I may not be the same skin color as you. Like, we're all from the same descent. So I feel like what Ruby Bridges did in its own is amazingly brave. I could totally do that again if I would go back. I wouldn't change a thing about the journey.
So you're articulating an experience of desegregation that's totally different from the context that folks came through in my generation.
Mm-hmm.
Because we think of desegregation as you're black, you're going to a white school.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't so much white going to black schools
because
they just didn't do it.
Yeah,
they stayed out of school, formed their own schools. In Virginia, where I came from, they even shut down this whole school district in one city in Virginia rather than desegregate the school. So there's a group of kids, they're not kids now, but they're people my age who just didn't have any schools, any schooling beyond a certain grade, because they had nowhere to go. So that was the circumstance under which desegregation took place. Do you think that would happen now if the judge said, well, black folks should be able to go to Millburn or from Newark? What would happen?
Well, I think that segregation, at least in our modern time, has become less apparent.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we have black, white, Latino, Asian kids, we're all going together to the same schools, which was the problem originally, that we weren't allowed to attend those schools. Now we are allowed to go to those schools, but instead of being separated in terms of physicality, we're more socially divided, if that makes sense. The fact that we aren't offered the same experiences because, one, we don't understand each other and our different cultures, and the fact that we aren't given the kinds of facilities needed to understand our cultures.
Do you think that, and one of the things that I'm hearing is, one, that the lines around desegregation and integration have blurred quite a bit in the generations that have happened,
mm-hmm.
Especially with the experiences that you're both sharing. And even as I think about my own experiences, when you're talking about this concept of passing, or with you, Kamaya, the idea of these are the expectations of being from a specific race or background mm-hmm. or culture. These are the stereotypes that are associated with them. Those lines are getting blurred right now. But when you all are considering, hey, this is what works in a classroom, or this is what I want access to, what do you think we should be advocating for as part of desegregation right now? Because it doesn't sound like we just need to be advocating for being in the same space. It sounds like you're advocating for access to resources, that you are advocating for policy to take a closer look at where segregation is occurring.
So on that topic, when you can clearly see, like, when you look in, so for example, we can look in a more urban community, the resources are not that good. They may not have access to, let's say, for air conditioning, we could say in our school, maybe air conditioners, things of that nature. You see, you go to a different school, they have that and more, 10 times more on top of that. And you look at it and you're in this school and you're like, well, that's unfair that they get that and we get not even half of that. Like, we're all students just trying to go to school, just trying to learn, just trying to graduate. Why is it that there is not the same amount of resources given to both schools, no matter what the race of the kid is, no matter where they come from, no matter what their background, no matter what they can bring? Why is there a differentiation between the two when we're all students just trying to learn, just trying to get ahead? I don't see. Yeah, it's.
Well, is there any other way to get the resources other than to say we must desegregate, go to the suburbs, go to another part of a geographic area?
I think this is when we can start advocating for ourselves. Like, we're, you know, when they're now starting to change things, like, now the voting age is now 17. I think that if we go out and protest, like, you know, we've seen how protesting can affect change, such as like the March on Washington in 1963, that affected major change for Black and Latinos. And I think that if us young people were to go out and advocate for those things, I think that they could definitely come for us.
You just mentioned the voting age being 17. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that? I know that we have some viewers that are outside of New Jersey who might not be watching the local news about what's happening in Newark, and kind of a historic moment that's happening.
Yes, this is very historic. I actually recently just found out about it, so I'm still just a little bit rusty on what I know. But I think that just the voting registration age being lowered just a year to 17, that is major news, because even though we're not legal yet, we still have things that we see in our society that want to be changed, that we want the better. We want better for our kids' kids. We just don't want better for ourselves. And we also want better for the people around us. So the age being lowered, amazing accomplishment. I hope that kids do really honestly go out and vote and see the change that they want to see in the future.
And I think that goes back to my point about having more enhanced facilities, mm-hmm. especially to be more informed on what our votes and the decisions that we make pertaining to our own city and country, how those will affect everybody in the country. Because mm-hmm. if we're not informed and we make a mindless decision, mm-hmm. possible the ramifications could be dastardly, is to put it in simple terms.
Well, let's play devil's advocate here, because people are...
Told you, we got the lawyer.
People are assuming that one has to go to where the resources are to get access to the resources. That's the underlying basis for desegregation, although there are some other kinds of theories on that too. For example, back in the 1950s, there was a man named Dr. Kenneth Clark who administered the doll test to some little Black kids, white doll, black doll, which do you prefer? And most of them said, we want the white doll. So his position was, and we used to argue about this all the time. He became a friend of mine. He said, you have to go, black people have to go to the white schools in order to get rid of that feeling, in order to feel comfortable with themselves. Mm. Do you all believe that?
No. So let's say we go to this white school. We don't, like what Malachi said, we don't know the ramifications of what can happen. Like, you can start to feel alienated, and you can also feel out of, like, you're having an out-of-body experience. You're around kids you don't know, around people who don't share the same experiences as you, who don't share the same, maybe not even the same home life as you, who are being taught different things. And you're just putting these black and Latino kids in a school with these white kids. Who knows what can happen? Because it, like, I was talking about this the other day, that it really honestly does all start at home. It depends on what the kid, what the child is being taught at home by their parents. Are their parents teaching them how to love no matter what race it is? Or are their parents teaching them to discriminate and only love what they see in the mirror, to only love who looks like them? So it honestly all starts at home with that.
Let's hear from a young lady named Takiya Howell, who was with us. She goes to Bard High School. And she has a particular opinion about what would happen if she went to one of these white schools, predominantly white schools, and she felt as though she had to stand up.
My mom always told me this. If there's ever an issue with somebody, there's always somebody higher up that can challenge what you're saying about that person. You know, so, and it's like, if they don't want to agree with you, go with somebody that's higher than them. So I just always learn to, you know, if you don't like something that's being done, you better say something.
So fight for herself. I think her mom gave her a great piece of advice. I think that if you want better, you go out and you go get better. So I think if she truly wanted to see change, she would go out and go get that change. And she would get people like-minded around her to go get that change, to really get what she truly wants. And also what we truly deserve as students, ultimately.
Now, here's another fun fact, and I'm gonna direct this to you first. First of all, Malachi, the Brookings Institute did a report. Brookings Institute, big think tank down in Washington. People seem to think that what they think is important. So let's just use this for a reference. Brookings Institute reported that they found a significant benefit to young, disadvantaged black youth in particular, saying if a black male student has at least one black teacher in the third, fourth, and fifth grade, he is significantly less likely to drop out of high school and more likely to aspire to attend a four-year college. Now, that's saying something about, I guess that's kind of like what you were saying, Kamaya, about the cultural advantage of being around or in a supportive environment. What do you think about that?
Well, being in an environment with people that are like us, we're able to learn more about ourselves and exactly where we come from. Whereas going straight to somewhere where people don't look like us, they don't know the struggles that we've gone through, it will once again bring about that feeling of alienation. Like, we don't know who we are. We don't know why you're here with us instead of someone that looks like us. We don't know what you're going to teach us about either ourselves or people that look like us. We don't know exactly how they're going to try and change our perception of our own people, of how, even if, and let me bring this up, how even if we're probably going to be somewhat assimilated, if that makes sense, to the cultures that we don't know, they're going to teach us about cultures that they're familiar with rather than the cultures that we're familiar with, and sort of, I don't like the word convert, but sort of change our modes of thought as to what is the norm, what is normal for you to believe, and what is normal for you to learn and bring out into the world.
Now, in that context, we had another young student talking to us that you may know, Terrell Coley from university. And I asked him, would you go to a white college? And this is what he said.
For me, I would try to, I would adapt to. I'm not just going to say right off the bat, oh, there's so many white people here. No, I'm not going to that school. I'm not saying that. I always have to try something because you never know. So I'm not going to say no to it. I'm going to try it out, see how it is.
I do believe I would. And barring everything I said before, I do believe that these colleges, these predominantly white institutions, like the Ivy Leagues, for example, that have been around for generations now, those are definitely have a higher white population, a higher Caucasian population in terms of the enrollment. And because they have such a vibrant Caucasian community, they have the kind of resources that I want to have personally. So things like advanced programs, better living situations, like things that I generally am not privy to, even though I'm not in an environment with everyone like me, I would take that chance of alienation again just so I could experience for myself the kind of environment that I could be having in this area.
It sounds like you're thinking that you're prepared for the alienation that might happen, but you're also ready to take advantage of the resources.
Yes, of course.
It's an interesting conflict to have, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like a conflict with one side of myself between another side of myself, where on one hand, I don't want to feel like I don't belong in this place, but at the same time, I do want to take advantage of the resources that this place offers. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of clashing with two different ideologies within my head.
Yeah. I wonder if you would feel the same way if you were having a different high school experience.
Well, actually, I actually now in my junior year, I mentioned my freshman year and how that was like heavily, I felt not even persecuted, but definitely some like alienation. I don't want to keep using the word alienation, but it's the best one I can find to use. Now that I've spent two more years at university, I've gotten to know amazing people like my friend Kamaya here. I've gotten to know all of these people who don't exactly look like me, aren't taught the exact same things as me. And I've been learning about their cultures and not unlearning everything that I've learned, but adding to that knowledge that I already have with knowledge that people of different communities and colors can provide to me, just so that I can not even like the word I said before, assimilate, but synergize rather my understanding with the understanding of a different culture.
What about you?
I would totally take the opportunity to go to a PWI. I think that...
To a what?
A predominantly white institution.
Okay.
I would totally take the opportunity... My apologies. I would totally take the opportunity because I feel like what Malachi said, the resources, the better living, and you get to meet other people who are not just... who do not just look like you. Unfortunately, I can say in most black and Latino households that the message of that the white man is the bad man, unfortunately, is unfortunately a preached message. Not in every household. I'm not putting that to every household, but that is a preached message. And my mom did not teach me that. Like, we are all people at the end of the day. And luckily I didn't have any not so good experiences with white people. I've actually had great experiences with them, and they never treated me as if I was indifferent. Like, I've always treasured this, that I've had, that I can connect with anybody, no matter what background, no matter what race. And I feel like going to a predominantly white institution would just help that flourish even more, because I can meet new people who are maybe who don't look like me, but are more similar to me than I think. And I think having that experience is something that you can treasure for a lifetime.
I've got one more question.
Okay.
So it was going back to something Kamaya said earlier, and it was about air conditioners in classrooms. Mm-hmm. And my kids are in Jersey City public school system, and the largest topic at our council meetings sometimes is over air conditioners in the school. And I was thinking about what you were saying, Malachi, about different rights to resources that mm-hmm. students have. So as we talk about what it looks like to have desegregated schools or integrated schools, it also feels like you're saying that there are certain rights that students should have in a school. What are some of those other rights? Because air conditioning is a big one. Like, the right
Huge.
To be comfortable
Definitely.
While you're learning
mm-hmm.
is a huge one that folks who have air conditioning in classrooms fully take for granted. What other ones are there?
I would say resources, rights to proper books, books that are not vandalized. Malachi, we read right there. Books that are not vandalized, books that are, because there are now, like, this is really, really also a serious topic, where they are starting to erase history. Like, they are starting to erase African-American history. They're starting to erase, especially Native American history. Rights to books that not only are not vandalized, but also books that share rich information that we can use in the long run, not just information that only can be used in the classroom, so that we can learn about other different cultures and topics, because we just can't learn about our own, because it's kind of like you need to know and be well-versed and well-cultured in multiple different areas, not just one.
Thank you both. We could keep talking to you for a long time. Since you are juniors, maybe we will whirl back around and get you at another point. Hopefully we can keep this kind of dialogue going, and we hope to see you again.
Thank you so much.
Good luck, yes. Everything's Political podcast is sponsored by the Center for Education and Juvenile Justice and supported by the Terrell Foundation and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and listeners like you. It is produced by Mosaic Strategies and Dreamplay Media, with theme music by Anthony Ant Jackson. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Everything's Political podcast on YouTube, press the red button, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you can connect with us on Facebook and Instagram, do so. See you next time. And remember, stay political.